Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, September the 13th. And this hour, we will examine the cultural history and the meaning of fences in America, and how fences play a part in how we define and divide land, how we build and break down barriers, how we identify with or separate from others with the fences we create. Why do we build fences anyway? What do they mean to you? Are we better off with them or without them? We're doing this program in conjunction with the traveling exhibition from the Smithsonian Institution called Between Fences, which, in conjunction with the Wisconsin Humanities Council, will be touring communities in Wisconsin this fall and through the spring, starting this weekend in Waupaca. We'll tell you about when and where Between Fences will be, and how the exhibit will be different in each of the Wisconsin host communities of Waupaca, Hills Corners, Sauk Prairie, Clear Lake, and Cable a little later on in the program. And we'll talk with a guest from the Wisconsin Humanities Council and an organizer of the exhibit in one of the Wisconsin communities, again a little later in the program. But we will start off first with the national curator of this exhibit. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions about the history, culture, and meaning of fences. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And please include your first name and your community with your email. And I'll wonder what first came to mind when I said, we're going to talk about fences. When I say fences, what do you think of? Is it the fence that you might have in your own backyard? Is it a fence that is being debated about between the U.S. and Mexico? Or something else? I'm just curious, what comes to mind when you first hear the word fence? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Let me welcome our guest. Gregory Dreiser is Vice President of Exhibitions and Programs at the Chicago Architecture Foundation, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is really fascinating and thought-provoking. What made you think of doing an exhibit on fences?
Well, there's something that's everywhere around us, and a lot of my focus as a curator and historian is looking at everyday landscapes, looking at the things that shape our lives, but that we take for granted. And certainly, I mean, as you see fences everywhere, and they're really, in a way, mysterious. And I just started to wonder about how they shape our lives.
Yeah, and they do shape. They certainly shape my neighborhood. Everybody has some fence in between our property borders.
Yes. Well, you know, as you may know, there's in the Declaration of Independence, it says that we're all entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what's interesting is that when Thomas Jefferson wrote Pursuit of Happiness, he actually replaced a phrase with an English phrase, which was life, liberty, and property.
Ah.
And so there's a very close tie in people's minds between, you know, owning things and being happy.
Yeah. And so we want to border off our property with a fence?
Well, not everyone does, but there are a lot of reasons why people like to have, you know, a fence around their property. First, just putting a fence up is making a statement, you know, that, you know, this is mine, this is my piece of earth, and you can or can't come in here, but I can decide.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, when I looked for a home to buy in the Madison area, I looked for a home with a fenced-in backyard because I had dogs, two of them, that I didn't want running into the street.
Well, it's funny you mention that because a really important part of the history of fences is the issue of whether the range should be open or closed. In other words, should animals be fenced in or should they be fenced out? And that's something, you know, most of us don't think about anymore, even though there's still areas of the U.S. where it is actually still an issue. But whether or not we fence in animals actually is a big deal. It has a lot of consequences, social and economic consequences.
Yeah, and I know we'll probably hear more about that, too, from one of our guests a little later.
Yeah.
But talk about the, I don't know, the history of the fence. I mean, is there, do we know who put up the first fence?
the first fence, no, but we do know in the U.S., when the European settlers came over, they said, basically, you know, the Indians don't fence in their land. They don't, you know, they don't claim their land, and so it's ours, you know, it's ours to take. We fence it in, we can take it, we can use it. And so they actually use fences as a way of claiming property. And, you know, we take for granted today that, you know, owning land is something, you know, maybe something natural or obvious, but, you know, owning the earth or owning land, it's almost like saying, you know, we can own the wind or we can own fire. I mean, it was a big leap. Certainly for some cultures to even think that, you know, land is something you can own. So, I mean, certainly from the beginning, fences were important in the U.S., first as a means of claiming the land, and then, you know, as a way of keeping animals inside or in or out, and as also as defense, you know, mechanisms when, you know, there were conflicts between the settlers and Native Americans. You know, fences were one way, you know, of defending places.
Yeah. Talk about how not just boundaries of personal property within a community, but the boundaries of states or nations.
Yeah, well, there's a, you know, fences are really very important symbols, first of all. So just whether or not you have a fence on your border, number one, and, you know, what kind of fence you have, what those borders are like, are really important statements, you know, about, first about yourself as a nation, and also about what you think of your neighbors. And there's another issue too, in that in order to create an identity, you know, people, you know, if you live in a city or even a country, you often speak about American character or national character, which may or may not exist. But in order to even create that identity, you need to separate yourself from other people. And I mean, even the word, this is actually, you'll find this in the exhibition, the word town actually comes from an old English word meaning fence. And in today in German, the word Zaun has the same root.
Mm.
And that's actually, you know, fence in German and town in English. They're related. And so when a country separate or a town separates itself, it's making a statement about who the people are. And it also helps create identity, as I said, because people often think that, you know, identity comes first and then you put a fence up. But actually, it's when you create the division and you're putting up a border between yourself and others, that's actually what's helping you generate difference.
Yeah. How do you convey the meaning of fences and the cultural history of fences in this exhibit? What do you do with the exhibit?
Well, it takes people through various, you know, some of these various areas. For example, there's a neighbor. We have a neighbor section because I'm sure many of your listeners either love or have maybe other feelings about their neighbors, you know, and that's often expressed in fences. And, for example, there's a very famous case, court case that took place in Iowa in the 19th century where a woman put her hand over a fence, and that became a major case, and it actually was determined that she was trespassing, even though she didn't actually, you know, set her foot across the borderline. She put her hand across, and that alone, you know, was enough to, you know, for her to be called a trespasser. And they're really these deep philosophical issues. You know, if you have someone has a tree next to you and there's a branch coming across and, you know, an apple falls down, like, who does that apple belong to? It's not, you know, it's not obvious right away. And in the exhibition, we try to get people to look at some of these issues and think about them.
Yeah, and are you various what artwork and
there are postcards, photographs. There are actually fence-building tools. There's various items relating to, you know, images of fences and how we build them.
Yeah. Well, we have lots of callers online who want to talk about fences. So let's remind you that you can call in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. We're talking with Gregory Dreiser, who is the curator of this traveling exhibit called Between Fences, which examines the cultural history and meaning of the fence in America. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. This exhibit from the Museum on Main Street, which is a partnership of the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service and the Wisconsin Humanities Council, begins its tour in Wisconsin this weekend in Wapaka. That's the first community. And we will tell you more about that a little later in the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Mr. Angry Neighbor, yes, I know just how you feel. 'Cause I've been taking your fruit, but don't tell me I steal. I haven't been in your yard, my tracks ain't on your ground. Your tree hangs over my fence the night you're not around.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon, John Munson in for Ben Marins, and after four on At Issue, John and his guests will preview President Bush's address to the nation tonight on Iraq. We will carry NPR's coverage of the president's address at 8 o'clock tonight. President Bush will address the nation to outline his plan regarding the reports of military progress in Iraq and his latest plan to begin some troop withdrawals. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. Tomorrow after 6, we will have a guest analyst to talk more about the future involvement of U.S. troops in Iraq tomorrow morning on this program. Right now, we're talking about an exhibit that begins its Wisconsin tour this weekend. It's called Between Fences. Our guest right now is the national curator of this exhibit. A little bit later, we'll talk with somebody from the Wisconsin Humanities Council and somebody with the Cable Natural History Museum about the exhibit as it travels through Wisconsin. So go to the phones. Jeremy in Cudahy is with us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
I just had a comment about the fences. I was going to mention something about the practicality of it with dogs and, like, small children, you know, mm-hmm. keep them safe. But my main point was just that I think, for myself anyway, I live in, you know, in a residential neighborhood, and I think having the fences on either side of us, to me, kind of creates somewhat of a sanctuary. It's a, you know, my neighbor. I mean, there's so much ambient light in the neighborhood and everything. And I'm definitely more of an outdoors kind of guy. And because of my job, I can't just move to the country or whatever. But having the fences, I think, you know, allows me to, I can, you know, put plants in the yard, have a fire, you know, in the backyard, like a, you know, campfire type thing in the backyard. And it just I think it separates some of the urban atmosphere of the neighborhood from, you know, from yeah. my little spot.
Interesting. Gregory Dreiser?
Yep. Well, I agree. I mean, a fence is really great for kind of establishing your own, or trying to establish your own little enclave or your own little escape from the world. And that's certainly a reason a lot of people like to have a fence up around their house.
Yeah, I have a kind of an ugly chain link fence that goes around my property. It was there when I bought the property, but it's covered up on most of all three sides by the trees and shrubs. So I have like two fences.
You know,
but that doesn't lend well to talking over the fence with a neighbor, though, does it?
Yeah, I think you can always find a way to talk with your neighbor if you like them enough.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeremy, for the call. Victor in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. My impression of a fence is, you know, I'm going from the standpoint when I was a little boy. I mean, it was something to be conquered. I mean, you got a fruit tree next door, you're checking around to see if any dogs are next door, angry neighbors, and it was something to be conquered. So it was a curiosity. Or if you got some angry bullies chasing after you, I'm not thinking about that fence or the property owner. I'm looking to escape. So, you know, there's different points of view of looking at it, but I can understand it. You know, growing up in inner city, you know, you need your privacy and you need people to respect your property inside your, you know, yard or whatever it is, because it can become a problem, especially in the urban area, because let's face it, It's almost survival of the fittest, and if you don't guard your property, you know, you're going to be trampled over.
A comment?
Fences, I think, are really important for, you know, defending your property and for safety and security. You know, yeah, fence can help with that. And even symbolically, just putting up the fence, even if it's not a strong fence, it just lets people know that you're, you know, you care about your own property and you're going to defend it.
Yeah. So is the fence a good thing or a bad thing?
You're asking me?
Yes.
It's both. I mean, it's both. You can't really judge. It depends how people use it. I mean, I'm sure you know the famous poem about fences and, you know, and neighbors. Even in that poem, it's ambiguous. You know, you don't really know, are they good or are they bad? I think they're definitely tools that are very useful for a variety of purposes.
Yeah. And what is the point of this traveling exhibit going to what seems to be a small communities or even rural communities?
Well, I mean, a larger point is that, you know, big cities get a lot of exhibitions, mm-hmm. and there are, you know, all these people all over the place who are not getting them. And so just, you know, no matter what the subject, it's great and I think important that people everywhere have access to, you know, exhibitions that deal with important issues. And then, you know, in terms of fences and properties, these are issues that affect everyone everywhere, and, it's really good to understand them. Because, first of all, just to understand the world around you and enjoy it, it's good to sort of know its history and know about it. And then there are a lot of practical, as your callers are indicating, there are many practical aspects to fences. And getting to, if you can understand that, then you can decide if and how you want to have a fence, how you want to use it, why you're using it.
Yeah, and there are so many different kinds of fences. In rural areas, I see a lot the barbed wire fence, to keep the cows in the pasture.
Right. Well, and barbed wire, you know, is, of course, a very famous type of fence, and it was first patented, I think it was 1872, in Illinois. And, you know, at the time, there was actually a fence crisis going on in the U.S. because to fence land actually cost a lot more than buying the land itself. And if you didn't fence your land in because the range was open, you couldn't keep animals out. So if you wanted to have a farm, for example, you know, you couldn't do it because there was no protection against, you know, people or animals. So there was a crisis. People saying, "What are we going to do? How are we going to take our, you know, farm the land? How are we going to? What are we going to do?" And so there was a lot. Many inventors were working on fences of all types. And the thing about barbed wire was, you know, it was very cheap and it was relatively easy to install. I mean, there was a lot of labor involved, but you could relatively quickly, you know, just buy this wire, you know, put up the post, and then enclose your property.
Next we go to Tony in Madison. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
I feel a little bit of a connection already. Greg just segued right into the topic I was going to mention, and that was, interestingly to me, the purpose of the fence was very agrarian for a long time, and I think it was co-opted by folks with far more urban interests, right? And interestingly, in Illinois, in DeKalb, there is a barbed wire museum, and I've been there a few times. Used to have customers in the area. So I would stop through and take some photos, and you're very right. There are, at least what I saw at the museum, at least several hundred types of very specifically, you know, useful for different environments and whatnot, sorts of barbed wire. And I think without that, we wouldn't really be talking about this right now. We wouldn't have expanded into this area of the country, wouldn't have been doing these things to make our lives possible out here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that museum is a great museum in DeKalb, and the reason it's there is that the guy Glidden, who patented that, you know, had that first successful barbed wire patent, actually was living there, and he teamed up with someone called Elwood, and they formed a company which actually became the basis of U.S. Steel. And but you're absolutely right that without these kind of relatively cheap fences, it's hard to imagine how, you know, how the settling of the country would have happened and farming. It's really something I'm not sure how it could have happened easily. It would have looked different than it does.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Tony, for the call. Then where did this white picket fence come from, the one that we all wanted around our cottage?
Yeah, believe it or not, there's no one answer to that. When I was working on this exhibition originally, I thought, oh, there's going to be so much historical material on the picket fence. But actually, it's one of those things that are everywhere and that are really mysterious. Probably its origin relates to a kind of, you know, defensive fences, which were actually called pales. They were pointed, very, very large pointed sticks or even logs that,
oh, yeah,
that were put in the ground as a method of defense, which came over from Europe and then was used here. And in fact, maybe you know the expression, beyond the pale.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that comes from these pales, because the pales were setting up a border. And so, you know, beyond the pale meant you were outside, you know, civilized society. But those, that kind of... you know, that kind of fence is probably the origin, but there's no, you know, nobody really knows, like, where the white, this image of the white picket fence, how it really took hold.
Interesting, yeah, because, you know, nobody's going to crawl over some metal pointy thing, but, yeah, you can easily crawl over a white picket fence.
Right.
But it just, maybe just more, so some people look at the fence, not only, yes, this is my property, but want it to be decorative and pretty, though, too, apparently.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, their fences are important symbols, and they've, and they have an important sort of ornamental function. And, you know, it's like a picture frame in some ways. It frames your property. And a lot of times it can, in a way, an image looks very much nicer in a frame. It can be the same way with a property, that it really adds character.
Yeah. Candace in Columbus. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to refer the listeners to the poem by American poet Robert Frost, which for my thinking about fences and caused me to reflect on fencing and walling very early in life. And I wish I could quote it. I can't. But he reflects upon one ought to be very aware and cognizant of what one's fencing in and fencing out. And it has, of course, a literal as well as metaphorical meaning. But people should look it up and read it. It's called The Mending Wall.
Yeah, can you quote that for us, Gregory Dreiser?
Actually, I just happen to have it here.
Good.
Here. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. That's part of the poem. And, you know, as I said, you know, people have looked at this poem, and even I think Robert Frost was interviewed about it, and it's really ambiguous. He's not saying fences are good or fences mm-hmm. are bad. He's just trying to look at both sides.
Yeah. Well, people have certainly different views on this fence issue. This is an ad that my producer found. This was back when the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill was still being debated in Congress. Let's just take a listen to this.
It certainly is a big border.
A very big border.
Last year, Congress authorized 700 miles of fence along the southern border.
Where's the fence?
But so far, just a few miles have been built. Now, Congress and the President want to give amnesty to millions of illegal aliens instead of securing the border. Call the President and Congress today and give them a message.
Where's the
So, do you deal with that issue, the border of the U.S. and Mexico in the fence exhibit, Gregory Dreiser?
Yeah, yes, we do. And, you know, that as people know, they're two, or they're perceived as two very different borders. The Canadian border used to be considered the longest unfenced border in the world, and it still may be. I'm not quite sure about the newest measures, but there's basically a swath of land that's kept free. They actually want it kept free of fences, so that they can, you know, keep it clear and just monitor it. But it is a very different feeling from what's going on in the south with the border with Mexico, where actually a lot of that border is also unfenced because it goes through land that basically people can't survive on, you know, desert. But as I'm sure everyone knows, a lot of that in recent years has been fenced, you know, and there are a lot of issues there that are interesting because at certain periods, like during the 20th century, there were certain periods when all of a sudden people focused on the border, and usually it had to do with the economy here. When people were upset about the economy, suddenly they would look, you know, at the fences and say, you know, we're trying to keep people out, Mexican people out from working in the U.S. And in recent years, as everyone knows, they've really stepped up that border. You know, part of that border, especially in California and maybe some areas of New Mexico. And what's happened as a result is now, as many of you probably read about last year, there was actually disastrous results. There aren't people to pick fruits and vegetables in California, and so it's rotting, and there were millions of dollars of losses. And recently I've read that actually these farms are now actually moving to Mexico in some cases. So, you know, people have, there's mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, there might be a lot of nationalism and a lot of pride and even legitimate anxiety about the economy. But the issue, you know, about the borders and who can cross them and why, they're not simple.
Yeah. Back to the phones. Chris in Rochester is with us next. Hi.
Hi, Joy, and your guest. This is wonderful, what you're doing today. I'm a fence builder down here, and I have part of the quote by Robert Frost on my business card. And, you know, fences can do a lot of things, and they reflect the owner a lot of times on, if it's a residential fence and they don't like the neighbors next door, they'll put in something harsh and very stark, stay out, leave me alone. And other times they can, I mean, depending on how creative you want to get, you can put in a design that blends with the landscape. And even though you still have the boundary or the picture frame, if you would, of your property, it can be very soft and very inviting. And I've been in some neighborhoods where, you know, they always say, well, we want a gate on this side, and it's so they can have access to and from their neighbors when they mm-hmm. choose. So a fence can reflect the individual's temperament and personality as much as anything. So
I should wonder about my neighbor who put up that big stark wall. No, I'm just kidding. But that's interesting that it really does reflect the personality of the person putting the fence up.
Gregory, you can put in a very gentle scallop top that kind of looks like, you know, little hills going all the way around your yard or something along those lines. So,
well, yeah, there are very, you know, many different types of fences, and I think they do reflect the owner's attitudes. And I mean, I look at fences as kind of a language. You know, it's sort of how, you know, how, what you're saying to your neighbors, and also not only your neighbors but other people in the town you live in.
Mm. Thank you very much, Chris, for calling in. Next, we go to Roger in Lakemoor, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling in.
Great. The last caller kind of, I think, segues nicely into what I was going to say about personality related to the kind of fence you use. I was brought up in the city of Chicago where, of course, everybody had their tiny little yards fenced in. Then I moved out to semi-rural surroundings in McHenry County, and I loved the fact that there were almost no fences. You could see the lay of the land. Everything flowed together. I didn't mind if kids walked through our yard or slid down the hill behind us. But then, about 10 years ago, the neighbor from hell moved in behind us. And so my wife and I had got to the point where we had to put in a privacy fence. So now we have a 6-foot privacy fence. It's falling apart. There are new neighbors who are very nice, and I'm just, like, really torn. Do I replace it with the privacy fence, or, you know, do I go to what I really would love is kind of an open picket-type fence? But they have a dog from hell, so so they're real nice, but they got a problem dog. So it's just interesting the way I'm thinking about this, discussing with my wife and kind of torn about what to do about replacing this stark barrier that really is not me.
Isn't that something? Yeah, and you've provoked a lot of thought here, Gregory Dreiser.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the same issues keep coming up, you know, security, you know, actually against animals. Something that's, you know, in the city and in rural areas, you know, you need to protect yourself against animals. And, you know, that's an issue. And then, you're right, so even when you say the neighbor from hell, I'm not sure what that means. That could mean, you know, noise. It could mean they're doing something you don't want to see. There are, you know, who knows what's going on. And it could be light. So, you know, the easiest way in areas where, you know, the people are living close to each other, no offense, is a very practical way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment about my neighbor from hell?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why not? We want
actually,
the details.
I want to be charitable because I feel that it was clear he had some mental issues. But I think he was suffering from some kind of paranoia, and he was accusing us of spying on him and making all kinds of weird comments while we were out in the yard. And so I just wanted to show him that, you know, we're going to put this up, and I needed to get his permission because of the local ordinances. And so I wanted to show him that we are no way interested in spying on him. We have our own lives to live. But that's basically what it was. He was very, I think he was disturbed.
Yeah.
And poor guy. I hope he got help.
Yeah, and you needed permission, though, to put that fence up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need permission if it's on the lot line. You could put it like 18 inches away from the lot line.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured I'll go and ask him and see what he says, and he agreed, which was kind of surprising, but it had more to do with that sort of thing than anything noise or light related.
Well, I say take down the Stark fence and ask the neighbors with the dog from hell to keep it tied. Who knows?
Who knows? Or maybe a 4-foot privacy fence or something. You know, some kind of compromise. But thank you. I appreciate your input. And we'll see. It has to happen soon because the fence is indeed falling apart.
Thank you very much for the call. I wish we had more time on with you, Gregory Dreiser. We have lots of people still in line, but I'll ask them to stay in line, and they can continue to talk with our next couple of guests. We'll be welcoming in a guest from the Wisconsin Humanities Council and someone from one of the host communities who will be hosting this exhibit as it travels Wisconsin. Any final words on what you hope people get from the exhibit, Gregory Dreiser?
What? You know, I just hope they come and visit it and think about these questions, because they're both, you know, very personal. You know, it's really about personal boundaries. At the same time, it's, you know, a really large-scale question, you know, about us as a country. So I hope they kind of think of it in both ways.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Gregory Dreiser, Vice President of Exhibitions and Programs at the Chicago Architecture Foundation, a national curator of this exhibit called Between Fences. Stay with us. We'll continue talking with some Wisconsin guests who will be are part of the exhibit when it comes to Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, and Kathleen and her guests will discuss the upcoming National Canine Legislation Conference this weekend in Kansas City, a look at breed-specific laws, dogfighting laws, and a Canadian city that seems to be doing things right. Well, that's coming up after 9 o'clock. We're talking about the exhibit Between Fences. It's an exhibit from the Museum on Main Street, a partnership of the Smithsonian Institution Traveling Exhibition Service and the Wisconsin Humanities Council. It begins its tour in Wisconsin this weekend. We'll tell you where and when and why. And welcome your questions still, or your thoughts about fences and what you think about when you think of fences. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are happy to have with us now Jessica Becker, Senior Program Officer with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here. So how did this exhibit is going to be traveling in a handful of Wisconsin communities, Wapaka, Hales Corners, Sauk Prairie, Clear Lake, and Cable. Why is it going to those particular communities?
Well, when we found out about this exhibition, we just got so excited for so many of the reasons that Greg brought up. It's really a great exhibition in that it takes this common object, a fence, and asks us to reflect about it ourselves personally and nationally. And so we put out a call for proposals from organizations in communities of fewer than 10,000 people and selected six. And so this is the tour we put together. These communities have been working for the last 2 years to prepare to host the Smithsonian. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them.
Right. And is the exhibit going to be different in all of the different communities. Is that right?
Absolutely. They have taken this exhibition and made it personal. They have taken these ideas about fences, boundaries, land, and connected it to their local issues, to what's important in those communities, whether it's up north and questions about fencing in wildlife because of the recovering wolf population, or whether it's in Lafarge and the Kickapoo area, and their community is divided over issues around the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. And so each community has taken the exhibition and planned programs and local components, local displays, photography exhibits. It's really neat how it will be different in every spot.
Oh, I missed Lafarge when I gave my little list there. Sorry about that. So talk about it. It opens in Wapaka this weekend, and what it's going to be there for a while, and then it moves on to the other communities?
Absolutely. It starts in Wapaka. We're kicking it off there. It's opening on Saturday, and it'll be there for 6 weeks, and then it'll move on to Hale's Corners. And so they're kicking it off with a big opening ceremony, a wire cutting, and the mayor will be excited to be welcoming the Smithsonian. The neat thing here is that the Smithsonian resources are coming to Wisconsin, and so federal resources are coming to our state because of this partnership with the Humanities Council and the Museum on Main Street program. So it's a really special program.
Yeah, the in Wapaka, I'm sorry, I don't have exactly where it is. It's going to be at a museum in Wapaka.
Actually, it's going to be at the public library there.
Okay.
The library has a great exhibition space. It's a beautiful library. And so the different host organizations are not all museums in our case, although the Museum on Main Street program is specifically for small organizations or institutions in rural communities. Not every rural community obviously has a museum, and so in some cases we're working with the cultural community, and so it'll be at a cultural arts center, it'll be at a library, and a museum, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is the exhibit tour and time and place calendar on your website?
Absolutely. It's at the www.wisconsinhumanities.org, and there'll be a link there to Between Fences where you can find the full schedule. And then you can link from our webpage to the individual host organizations to find out all the programs they have planned during the 6 weeks that the exhibition is in their town. Yeah.
And what do you hope, Jessica, that people take away from this exhibit?
Well, you know, I think that Gregory Dreiser said it really well, in that it's really a great opportunity to think about something that we see every day, whether it's in our own front yards or in the landscape, and to think about why we make the choices we do about what fences we put on our own property, but also how we make larger national decisions about community and our borders. So there's just the big and the small, the local and the national, and I just hope people engage in some really good conversations and reflections about these questions.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Jessica Becker, Senior Program Officer with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. And now we welcome in Cully Shelton. He is a naturalist with the Cable Natural History Museum. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
You're welcome.
And you are curator of the Between Fences exhibit when it comes to cable.
That's correct. And we're going to have it May 31st to July 12th in the year 2008.
Yeah. And why are you excited about hosting this exhibit?
Well, we felt that it would provide our community an area with access to the resources and information that previously had been unavailable or inaccessible because, you know, most of those big exhibits are going to the larger, larger cities within the nation, and so we were able to bring it to our small community here.
Yeah.
Also, it helps us advance our organization's objectives by showing an appreciation for nature and land. It provides opportunities for us to develop new creative programming and advocate stewardship for the protection of the environment.
Yeah. Why, though, in particular, how are you going to personalize the Between Fences exhibit?
Well, in the community of cable, we've hosted a summer lecture series called the Joseph Jenkins Lecture Series, and it's now in its 43rd year. And so one way that the museum is going to personalize and or supplement the Smithsonian exhibit is by holding a lecture series that is called Creating Community Conversations. So we're going to bring in four different scholars or experts from the state, and they're going to help our community thoughtfully and delicately deal with some of the conflicts and challenges that we have and continue to face in our area and also our specific place.
Yeah, what are those challenges when it comes to the concept of fences?
Well, some of the things that are well-known conflicts within the northern part of Wisconsin often tend to deal with user conflicts. We are, you know, in an area that is rich in natural resources, and we face increasingly environmental threats from the harvest and or mining of resources. And so there's a lot of different things that happen with user conflicts, lakeshore development, logging, also the overuse of natural resources. So that's an example of some of those conflicts that we have to deal with as a community often.
Let me bring in a caller, Nina in Viroqua. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say I'm from DeKalb, Illinois, and I've been to the Barbed Wire Museum many times, and I'm an artist. And when I go in an airplane, I love to look out the window and look down, and one of the most striking things is in nature, plants tend to grow in rings and circles and natural forms, but you can really see all those lines and boundaries that people have made in their efforts to own the earth, which I think is somewhat ridiculous, because the earth has been here billions of years and we live a short time. And I just think it's interesting how, you know, it affects the plants and it affects the animals. And it affects, you know, people take what they can and what they want, and, you know, then we think we can throw things away by removing them from our little piece of the earth. And I've just always been a traveler and moved around a lot, and I've seen how people use fences in other places. Like in Albuquerque, people have little walls around their yards, but they're all low, mm-hmm. and people can talk over them, and some of them are high, but they just make like a nice little space in your little gravelly backyard. There's not grass there.
Yeah, and Nina, I'm glad you called in. So you don't have a fence in where you live in your own personal property?
Well, I have a little tiny balcony with a little fence around it.
Oh yeah, okay.
And there's no fence around our back area, and there's a little field, and we're right on the edge of town. And I hope you come to Viroqua. We have a nice community here that's interesting people.
Well, you, I think you can go to, it's going to go to Lafarge, which is not, I mean, it's in the vicinity. So there are, the communities have already been picked where the exhibit's going to go. It's going to be in Wapaka, Hales Corners, Lafarge, Sauk Prairie, Clear Lake, and in Cable. Right now we're talking with the naturalist at the Cable Natural History Museum, Cully Shelton, who is the curator of the Between Fences exhibit when it arrives in Cable in the spring. It opens this weekend in Wapaka. But Cully Shelton, talk a little bit. I thought that Nina's call was interesting in part because of how she believes that these fences disrupt wildlife and the environment. Do you want to talk about that? I mean, does she have a point there?
Yeah, I think she very much does. Mm-hmm. One of the speakers that we're going to have a part of our lecture series when the exhibit is in our community is Kurt Meine, and he's the senior fellow with the Olive Leopold Foundation, and he's also an author. And one reason we're going to ask Kurt to come and speak to our community is because he does a really great job at thinking about how fences do affect the ecology of the land. And Aldo Leopold also, within his research and his studies of conservation and wildlife management, talks about how when you had different fence rows, you had different ecology. And as the fences were wide, you would incorporate more and more species. And as the fences move from, you know, a wide fence row to smaller and smaller fence rows, like a barbed wire fence, it doesn't allow as much, as many animals to allow to, for them to live in that space. Yeah. And so we're going to have him come in and help us in our community think about the impact that fences have on the land, and also what happens when nature and wildlife doesn't respect the man-made divisions that we have set out as a community.
Yeah. What about, we heard when we first started the program with the national curator of this exhibit about how the fence really started in America. The European settlers brought this idea over with them and were kind of amazed that the Native Americans did not, you know, they didn't believe in fences. They didn't fence in the land. They didn't do any fencing. There are a number of Native American tribes in northern Wisconsin. Are they going to be a part of this exhibit?
Yes, they will. There are three reservations that are within 60 miles of Cable, Wisconsin, and our museum. And our area has been influenced by both the rural and Native cultures. And the Native Americans have significantly shaped our area, as well as the interactions that the Europeans who settled in this area had. So the Lacouture Community College is going to be helping us supplement this exhibit with also partnering in our lecture series. We have asked and are going to have an Ojibwa community leader come and speak with our community about the Native American perspective of land historically and today, and provide our community with the culturally significant story of this area.
Yeah. The caller's been waiting. It may not be exactly appropriate for our guest right now, but is it Geraldo in Milwaukee?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes. What did you want to say about fences?
Well, I'd like to make a comment on, like, the Great Wall of China. You know, it worked for a while, and then it's just sitting there. The wall of in Germany, it ended up, you know, coming down because it was a divider on the culture and also within the country. And I 100% agree that we need to have some kind of control. I'm originally from Mexico. I'm a U.S. citizen now. I do understand, and like I said, 100% agree that we need to have some kind of control on immigration crossing.
Yeah.
However, we complain that the people that cross the border have taken over jobs.
Yeah, you know what, Geraldo, I'm afraid we don't have any more time. I guess, do you have any thoughts on fences dividing people, Cully?
I do think that, you know, fences, as Greg had spoke about, and also many of the other callers this morning, you know, that fences do sometimes separate communities and also separate neighbors and people, as well as people from their relationship to the land.
Well,
and so I think that's an exciting thing for us.
Well, it's a very thought-provoking idea, and I wish you luck with the exhibit when it comes to Cable. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Cully Shelton, naturalist with the Cable Natural History Museum. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.